From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo and state leaders assess what it will take to get a budget deal with just under 3 weeks remaining for an on-time agreement. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on another fracking delay, and we'll take a look at the gun control debate through the eyes of Army soldiers. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. With just under 3 weeks to go before a state budget deadline, Governor Cuomo and legislative leaders met this week to assess how far they have to go to reach a deal. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
In order to meet their self-imposed deadline of March 21st to complete a spending plan, Governor Cuomo and lawmakers will have to work through some thorny issues like disagreements over the state's minimum wage and how to expand casino gambling.
We have a number of issues on the table that are challenging and that are controversial, I guess you could call it. So we're working very hard, but it's going well. But am I concerned? Yes.
Cuomo has raised the possibility of leaving out the more complicated issues until later in the session after the budget has passed. For now, though, neither the governor nor legislative leaders are willing to drop anything, although Senate GOP leader Dean Skello says he still has reservations about a minimum wage hike.
We still haven't made a decision as to whether expanding the minimum wage is going to be counterproductive to job creation.
Skello spoke after a closed-door meeting between the governor and legislative leaders. The Republicans co-lead the Senate with five breakaway Democrats. Senator Jeff Klein, the leader of the Independent Democratic Conference, was also at the private meeting. Senator Klein is a major backer of the minimum wage increase.
We need to increase the minimum wage quickly. I think it should be part of the budget. Clearly, I've made the case time and time again that this is a revenue generator. This is going to pump $600 million back into the economy, create 5,000 jobs.
Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver, who was the first to propose the minimum wage increase over a year ago, says he's fine with either timetable as long as the hike happens. The speaker says he does have some issues, though, with the budget proposed by Cuomo, including millions of dollars in cuts to services for the disabled announced by the governor's budget director a few days ago.
I have a lot of concerns in various parts of the budget, including disabled services.
The federal government has been charging that New York had been overbilling Medicaid for years for state-run developmentally disabled centers. Cuomo cut $500 million out of the state's Medicaid budget to comply. $120 million would come from services to the disabled. $380 million would be saved by lowering spending caps to other Medicaid services. Barbara Crozier with the Cerebral Palsy Association of New York State says the 6% across the board cuts combined with earlier budget reductions would mean staff cutbacks and fewer programs. She says not-for-profit providers would be made to pay for a Medicaid billing mistake that they had nothing to do with.
We absolutely feel like we're being punished for something that we really had nothing to do with.
Governor Cuomo says he's open to funding restorations in general, but he says lawmakers need to find the money.
Everyone has a good idea on how to spend money. They're not as creative on how to find the money. And the parameters of the conversation are no new taxes. We're not going to raise revenues. So it has to come from within that set amount.
Speaker Silver predicts the revenue estimates due out March 1st will find that there is $400 million more dollars than previously thought. Silver says the Assembly's budget plan will restore $260 million that Cuomo cut to New York City schools after they failed to meet the governor's deadline to agree on a teacher evaluation plan. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, let's start with hydrofracking, that process to extract natural gas from the shale, and that's been going on in New York and continues to be delayed. Wednesday, another deadline missed. The state's DE commissioner, Joe Martin, saying he's waiting for the health commissioner, Nirav Shah, to make a ruling on the health study, and we don't know yet what's going to happen there, and the governor remains mum.
Well, look, the Cuomo administration is a highly structured, we have seen story after story about this, you know, operation in which the top guy says what he wants, and then everybody jumps up and does it. Now, can I prove it? No. But I am telling you now that when Joe Martens, the environment commissioner, asks the health commissioner, Dr. Shah, for more information, you know, that means somebody has put the hold on the whole operation. Now, it is true that these guys are master pollsters, and they know what is salient to people. And something has stopped them from going forward, because I think in the beginning they were going to go forward. I think that was clear. And now it's stopped. Now, whether they're waiting for the whole thing to go away and people to lose interest and then they come in, or whether they say this is a loser, political loser, we don't want this, this cuts into our base, and right now we're doing well, is another story. So I think it doesn't happen by accident that these deadlines get missed. I think that it happens because they're not ready to move forward politically.
Let's stay with politically for a second. New freshman Senator Cecilia, otherwise known as Cece Kasich, who hard fought and won after vote counting in New York's 46th district against Republican George Amador, came out the victor, ran on campaign finance reform. Now the Republicans blasting her because she has the audacity to have a $1,000 a plate fundraiser to raise money for her 2014 campaign.
Now, I'll tell you who the hypocrites are here. It ain't Cece Kasich. It's the Republicans, because what has happened is they've got a pay-to-play system that they've developed. She comes in and she says, this is wrong. It shouldn't be that the people with the most money win. So what we need is a fair campaign system in which everybody has an equal footing. What you do is you give people money to run, or you at least prohibit how much money they can use. They come along and they say, no, we don't want to do that. She says, okay, I can't run on air. I can't run on air. I need some campaign help in order to win. But when I win, you can be sure, and she won, and when we win now, we're going to go to campaign financing. Now, this is pretty important, because as you know, the Assembly has been regularly saying that, therefore, they're the Democrats. Why wouldn't they say it? Now the Democrats, there are really more Democrats. Let's face it, folks. There are now more Democrats in the Senate than there are Republicans. Therefore, think about this. What they've done, Republicans very cleverly, I suspect with the help of Governor Cuomo, picked off some errant Democrats to vote with them. They've given them committee chairmanships. A guy named Klein from the Bronx of all places is leading this whole thing. And Cuomo wants Republicans in charge. We know this because he is a fiscal conservative, a self-styled now, new fiscal conservative. And he does not want to go forward as a free spending liberal. He knows the taxpayers don't like that. And he needs the Republicans in office in the Senate in order to make that happen. We know he helped because he didn't veto a bill he promised he would, which would have made it much harder for the Republicans to win. So one and one makes two. He wants that. But now things are really collapsing for the Republicans. You know, they're done. It's a blue state. The Assembly is overwhelmingly blue and Democratic. With Kasich's election, there are now more Democrats than there are Republicans. If you add up all the Democrats, including the sellout, and I don't use this word easily, it's the word that I hear being used, traitors to the Democratic cause who have gone over to pick up a few coins and committee chairmanships and things of that kind. So that's the way it looks to me, that Kasich is being attacked vigorously by the Republicans, but it doesn't matter. They're done.
What about Governor Cuomo and running for president? Two articles by Maggie Haberman this past week, Alan. One about his, quote, mega fundraisers out of state coming in March, and another one that says he's got trouble in front of him, which is Hillary Clinton.
Look, he can't beat Hillary Clinton. That's ridiculous. The way he got to be governor is a tripartite affair. Number one, he was the son of one of the most famous Democrats in America, Mario Cuomo, who people loved. And Democrats loved the guy. He was a shining city on a hill and major speech at the Democratic Convention, which is regarded as the number one speech maybe of all times at a Democratic Convention, right up there. So, number one, he's the son of the former governor. Number two, he came in at a time when New York State was really in bad shape. Let's face it. You had my friend Elliot Spitzer, who had to leave office. You had David Paterson, who again, a great guy, but had all kinds of issues, personal issues and otherwise. And so the field was clear for him at that point. The voters took a sigh of relief and said, okay, this is great. We have a guy who's tough. He'll make everything run on time. And he did, and he has. But now he's running into trouble. He's running into trouble on things like gun control. He's running into trouble on fracking. He's running into trouble because his administration fired some guy from the Department of Transportation who gave an interview to a reporter, which was not insulting, but shows you how tightly the Cuomo people control things. And they made the guy resign, and he went public, and now it's a huge affair. I know my friend Ira Fussfeld in the Kingston Freeman wrote a blistering editorial on this just recently. And so we have him facing what he knew he was going to face, which is there comes a period when the honeymoon is over. So I think that some of this is going to be tough on him, particularly what I was just talking about, which is that the Republicans, which he needs to keep his fiscal conservatism going, the Republicans aren't going to be there forever. And then he may really have some major trouble.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Education has been a hot-button topic in New York politics. Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver turned up the heat this week by calling for reversing Governor Andrew Cuomo's plan to withhold school aid from New York City. That development broke as advocates warned a child care crisis is set to impact the state economy. More from the Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas.
Speaker Silver came forward Sunday pledging to restore, in the budget plan the Assembly is now preparing, $260 million in school aid that Governor Cuomo threatened to sideline because the Big Apple missed a deadline to finalize a teacher evaluation system. Silver's move came days after a judge ruled the state couldn't withhold any funding from the city until a court decided on a lawsuit challenging the legality of such a penalty. His stance puts him at odds with fellow Democrat Cuomo at a time when the governor has seen his poll numbers dwindling in what observers say is reaction to the sweeping gun law reforms rushed through Albany. The Assembly's Democratic majority is poised to make restoring the school aid a top priority during budget negotiations. Republican Assemblyman Pete Lopez weighs in.
I don't think it's limited to Democrat, Republican, or upstate, downstate. I think there's an acknowledgement that education is a vital service that we provide. And unless we come together on this currently disjointed state policy and budget funding, our children will suffer.
Cuomo previously stipulated that any school district failing to finalize an evaluation deal by January 17th would be deemed ineligible for a planned increase in state education aid. Meanwhile, advocates say a perfect storm of diminished funding, increasing costs, and a growing low-wage workforce is straining New York's child care program to the breaking point. A new report from downstate business leaders entitled Boosting New York's Economy, Short and Long-Term Economic Gains Through Quality Early Learning, says without quality early child care and education, the future holds unqualified workers and potential bad citizens and a failing economy. On the other hand, children enrolled in high-quality early learning programs are more apt to excel academically and financially as adults. NYSET spokesman Carl Korn applauds Governor Cuomo's effort to expand full-day pre-K. He agrees more needs to be done.
Full-day pre-K kindergarten programs are a good way to make sure young children get a good start in school and that the achievement gap that we are all so concerned about never opens in the first place. So this is a sound investment in education. We applaud the $15 million included in the governor's proposed budget, but we believe much more is needed to help all those students out there. If it's such a great program, we should make sure that every child who needs it has it and not pick and choose through a competitive grant program.
Michael DeLuise, president of the Melville Chamber of Commerce on Long Island, says investments in high-quality early care and education have a multiplier effect, giving an immediate boost to New York businesses and long-term economic benefits through a more skilled future workforce.
So New York State right now has a commitment for $25 million in their budget. You say, oh, what is that going to mean? It'll repay itself 16 times, and they're looking at maybe putting quite a bit more, maybe as much as $75 million in it.
Advocates across New York are calling for a change in the allocation formula for the child care subsidy. Governor Cuomo's office did not return calls for comment. There's a link to the early education report on our website, wamc.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation has released for public comment a policy designed to encourage businesses to audit themselves and voluntarily report any problems to the DEC. The goal is to prevent pollution and improve compliance with environmental laws. More from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
The DEC policy states it wants to encourage regulated entities to audit their operations and adopt effective approaches to prevent violations, thereby improving compliance with environmental laws statewide and protecting public health and the environment. Ned Sullivan is the president of Poughkeepsie-based environmental group Scenic Hudson. He says such a policy has the potential to drive businesses to become greener above and beyond basic requirements.
Well, we're going to carefully review the policy, but New York State has a long tradition of encouraging pollution prevention and going beyond the minimal requirements of complying with the laws and rules. So we think that conceptually this is a good thing.
Tom Phillips is the executive director of Newburgh-based Hudson Valley Technology Development Center. The center is listed in the proposed policy as a technical resource in the Hudson Valley to help reduce and prevent pollution.
In general, you know, I really support the idea of making it a voluntary policy. We've been doing environmental green stuff, those type of things for probably 15 years now. And one of the things that you typically run into is this fear that they're doing something wrong and they want to keep it below the radar, so to speak. They try to fix it, but they don't necessarily reach out for help, all of the help that's out there to really fix the problem for the fear of being caught and penalized. So this is a big step in the right direction where, you know, if you do it voluntarily, there's help out there for you and relatively penalty-free as long as you're fixing the problem ultimately.
Sina Cutson Sullivan says the policy is an opportunity for businesses to lead the way environmentally.
We understand that they're proposing waiving penalties and enforcement action if a company identifies a problem and commits to taking action before there's an enforcement action underway. And again, that can be a good thing, but we want to make sure that this doesn't encourage companies to deliberately violate the law and come forward later to say, oh, you know, we've made a mistake, we'll repair the damage. You know, we want to encourage companies to do an audit of their own operations, to identify the things that they can do to cut down on their pollution, to be real environmental leaders rather than just meeting the bare minimal letter of the law.
Companies with a history of failing to comply with environmental regulations are not eligible. Certain violations are excluded from the policy, including recurring violations, criminal activity, or actual harm to people or the environment. The policy also identifies incentives for regulated entities to go beyond compliance by agreeing to evaluate and incorporate environmental management and pollution prevention into their systems. All comments on the proposed policy must be submitted to the DEC by April 22nd. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The gun control debate has reached a new pitch following the passing of New York's SAFE Act, culminating in a rally this week at the state capitol against the new law. The Innovation Trail's Joanna Richards takes a look now at how the Army and soldiers handle weapons to see if any lessons can be gleaned to inform the civilian debate.
Speaking to soldiers about firearms, no matter what their individual views are on gun control, one thing becomes clear. They take them seriously. One soldier told me the biggest thing the military teaches you is to respect the weapon you're issued. Scott Petrowski is the Policy Action Officer for the Physical Security of Arms, Ammunition, and Explosives for the Army. He says a culture of safety is created from the moment a soldier joins up.
Weapons safety is briefed and is always emphasized to each time a soldier is issued or handles a weapon. At a minimum, soldiers having arming authorization require annual training that includes weapon safety, care, live fire qualification, and training on rules for the use of force.
The use of guns and ammunition is tracked carefully. Army-issued weapons are kept in locked racks in armories equipped with intrusion detection systems monitored by law enforcement. Soldiers have to carry the appropriate certification for every weapon issue and are strictly monitored during live fire exercises. I'm out at the Watertown Sportsman's Club's weekend skeet shoot. Jeff Chambliss is a specialist with the Army's 10th Mountain Division at Fort Drum and a member of the club.
I want to get into some pheasant hunting up here.
So a little practice?
Yeah, practice. As you can see, I need some practice.
Chambliss is using a shotgun for the skeet shoot, but when I ask him what he thinks of military-style semi-automatic weapons in the hands of civilians, what are legally termed assault weapons, he echoes what I hear from a lot of soldiers who are also hunters and target shooters on the weekends. No problem, he says, as long as people are using them safely.
Military-style weapons, it all projects a bullet. And bullets can be thrown out of, you know, any type of weapon. It does. Just because they're military-style doesn't mean they're as dangerous or more dangerous than a civilian weapon that any civilian can buy.
New York's SAFE Act limits magazine capacities to 7 bullets. But as one soldier pointed out, in the Army, soldiers practice changing magazines rapidly. Whether or not a smaller magazine will slow a shooter down depends entirely on how much practice that person has had changing magazines. For that reason, many soldiers I spoke with said they didn't support that measure, and instead wanted to see a closer link between mental health records and gun permits. But Patrick O'Donnell, an Army captain at the skeet shoot with Jeff Chambliss, says that approach has its pitfalls, too.
You have people who... If they were to be, you know, restricted from owning a type of rifle or something, that might make them reluctant to go seek help, which in some cases might cause more problems than it would solve.
Soldiers like O'Donnell and Chambliss, who own private firearms, have to register them with their Army post if they live or use them there. They're briefed on federal, state, and local laws they must follow and have to follow the post rules on authorized use and storage. I interviewed soldiers who wanted to see more and less regulation of firearms, although most came down on the side of less regulation. All I spoke with reflected Jeff Chambliss's sense of seriousness when it comes to handling weapons. Any gun can be dangerous, and they need to be kept out of irresponsible hands. Exactly how to do that is something everyone, no matter their political leanings, is trying to figure out right now. In Watertown, I'm Joanna Richards for the Innovation Trail.
Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between 5 upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1309 or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.